Welcome to the Western New York Entrepreneur Podcast, helping Western New York entrepreneurs take the next step in their business. If you love Western New York and entrepreneurship, this is the podcast for you. Whether you have been in business for 20 years or 20 minutes, there is something for everyone. David Schaub interviews the top entrepreneurs in Western New York so you can take your next step in your own business.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode. We appreciate you listening. Today we have Evan Giocas, the owner of the College Confidence Coach. I do have to say, and I have to give you a little warning right off the bat. If you have not had your cup of coffee today, or if you want to stay a little half awake, if you're listening to this in the morning, you're going to be woken up. So if you don't want to have energy while listening to this, if you just kind of want to stay half awake, this is not the podcast episode for you today. Because Evan, if you don't know him, it brings the energy every single time. So get ready for today. We have a lot in store for you. So Evan, dude, I really appreciate you being on the show today.
David, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I'm thrilled to be here and absolutely ready to bring the heat. So I'm ready to jump in if you are.
Yeah, dude, I'm ready.
Cool,
so,
let's do it.
So Evan, for those that don't know who you are, your entrepreneurship journey, how you got to where you are, or even what you do, in like a 2 or 3 minute synopsis, can you kind of share the audience what you do?
Yeah, let's give the elevator pitch. So my life in entrepreneurship started young. I actually remember being a child and running hockey camps in my parents' neighborhood. Parents would come and drop their kids off for an hour. I would teach wrist shots, slap shots, whatever. And to be truthful, I wasn't very good. I just loved the sport. So I think that early I recognized that I had some entrepreneurial dreams. But the quick 2 minute story, while I was going through college, I really struggled to find who I was. And I journeyed and transferred to a bunch of different universities. I tried a lot of different majors. I ended up applying for law school, all to figure out that working in a capacity that wasn't for myself or that wasn't fulfilling my passions and dreams was just something that wasn't going to happen. So I actually, and we'll talk about this, I read a book given to me by one of my mentors about cognitive ability, how we instinctively do our best work when we're in an element that allows us to strive. And the book was written by a woman named Kathy Cole. I took what little money I had at the time, which was probably actually debt, and went out and flew out to Chicago and got certified in this process of becoming a cognitive coach. And there was the aha moment. It was, well, you know, if I had this while I was going through my own collegiate pursuits, I would have never struggled the way that I did. So in that moment, I birthed the idea for the College Confidence Coach. And that was in 2012. I dropped out of law school. And since that day, I've never done anything else.
Still in school when you took that leap of going
to... I was in my first semester of law school.
Oh my gosh, okay, that's crazy. So when did you go like full-time, like, oh my gosh, this is a business, I can actually make money off my passion, what I love solving. When did that kind of click for you?
It clicked about 3 months into it, and I truthfully dropped everything I was doing at the time. So I knew I was going to dive headfirst into this. Where it was going to take me, I really didn't know. Fortunately, I had a pretty good relationship with some family friends who had children that were about to navigate that high school to college planning journey, and I told them. I was like, hey, I'm starting this thing. I'd love to work with, you know, your kids for free. Let me get my cut my teeth on this, and the results were so extraordinary that I started pitching the idea around, and it took probably about 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, making money is great. Obviously, it makes the world go round. It lets you pursue more passions and give back to people. But what is this entrepreneur journey meant to you so far, Evan? What has it done for you, or what has it meant to you?
That's a great question, and it's everything. I mean, when I look at where this has taken me, obviously at first, I think any entrepreneur goes through the struggle of, okay, well, I got to eat tuna fish out of the can, and I got to pay my dues, and you know, I appreciated that struggle. So when I look at entrepreneurship as a whole, and I look at what this journey's meant to me, it's given me a platform to be able to be my authentic self. It's given me a platform to be able to, more importantly, give these students and these people that I work with the ability to be their authentic selves. And I think that when you're really hitting your element or you're striving in entrepreneurship, you recognize right off the bat that what we do has so much more to do with the people that we impact rather than what we're doing for ourselves. So taking that scarcity mindset and turning it around and saying, okay, well, instead of being fearful here, I want to be able to provide great value to the people in my life. That was a transformational moment for me. And it's something that I love to give and aid students with as I work with them.
Yeah, so I love it because it brings up a point that I believe everybody has a different definition of success or entrepreneurship. I believe that true entrepreneurship, and loving the journey of it anyways, is that when you solve people's problems with your passion, then you can monetize it. That is entrepreneurship, in my opinion, right? Sure. It's not just when you follow the money and then the money comes, you can tell that it just kind of dies or starts receding. So clearly you've grown, and Evan's not going to brag, so I'm going to do it for him. Evan has done really well for himself. Okay, this is something that wasn't started, you know, the last 2 years or anything like that. Obviously, it's been a 7-8 year journey for him. He's done very well for himself, and he's actually looking to expand and grow. And, you know, he's looking at all the options last time we talked about that. So it's really cool, and I want to pick his brain on everything that he has to know about entrepreneurship. So that being said, I'm going to go off script a little bit here.
Yeah.
So you talked about that book you read.
Sure.
And then now you transferred over to college students. But obviously, and we were talking about this before I hit the record button, I really feel like as adults, 30, 40, 50, 60-year-olds, a lot of us are just 18-year-olds that are just a little more hairy, a little older, maybe more gray hair. If anything, because we always say we shoot for our dreams, we go for it in life, but then life happens. Well, this is the way life is. Or, sure. You know, apathy, even subconsciously sets in. We get stuck in our ways, right? So I want to ask you is what have you learned that you think the local entrepreneurs listening to this can really apply to themselves personally or maybe even their business? I know it's kind of a general question, but what can you take from that?
Yeah, so when I think about myself at that age, right, I came from immigrant parents. So just taking it back for a second, seeing it is believing it, right? And I know that that's a little bit cliche, but when you see it and you're able to realize that it is possible, that little spark, that little flame that goes inside of you can really set ablaze. So when I think about advice that either parents can be giving to aspiring young entrepreneurs or just aspiring entrepreneurs, like you said, that are ready to try it for the first time, the most important thing that I ever did was surround myself with mentors. Just find people who have been where I want to be and ask them a million different questions. And, you know, maybe it is part of the profile, but when you look at an entrepreneur in nature, I think that most of us just want to give back. We want to tell our stories. We want to be able to nurture people to see that greener pasture, you know, that we once saw it and then found. So definitely going through those motions of being through and with people who have been where you want to be and have gone through the struggles, most importantly, and being able to ask them how they got through it is my first piece of advice.
No, that is so good. And that makes me think, Evan, because a lot of times we think this is just the way it is, or this is the way things have gone, this is how it's going to go in the future, because we haven't seen it. Sure. We might have seen it on, you know, on social media, or you see it around the world, you see, like, you know, TED Talks. But the point is that when you see it for real, people that you actually know you've come in contact with, that whether it's mentors locally or people that you contact or are in contact regularly, I'm just sitting here going, when you see them go for more, when you see that they're achieving it and then see them taking risks and going for it and achieving it, it's kind of hard not to want to follow suit in that.
Sure.
So that being said, to our listeners, I want to stop you for a second, stop you in your thought, and I want you to ask yourself that question. Is my environment, the people I have around it, is they inspiring me to do more, inspiring me to go for it, inspiring me to just to be my, using Evan's words, authentic self here? Or is it just being mundane, just another week, same thing, different day? Because that is huge. That, I think, that's how we waste. That's how we, where did 5, 10 years go? I've done the same exact thing. It's because of the people that you're surrounding yourself with. I think that's huge, Evan. So anyways, Evan, what is some of the best advice you ever received in the early stages of starting your business? I do want to ask that question.
Yeah, the absolute best, and I'll never forget it, is to follow your internal self-validation. And so I've taken that term and I've rolled with it. And it's something that has really transformed my life. Too often when we look at the people in our lives who either push us forward or, as you were just touching on, pull us back, we rely on the advice of the people that we think know us well, right? I mean, not rocket science. We want to be asking the people in our lives to validate, hey, I think I'm going to do this, or hey, I think I'm going to go there. And as an entrepreneur, most people have never been to that mountaintop that you aspire to climb. So you'll get advice from people that could be parents or teachers or friends or even things you see in the media that you adapt, and it becomes part of your mantra of, well, maybe you should do this, or maybe you should go there. That might defer you or deter you from the path that you're aspiring to take. And when you go down that path, it's not that these people are purposely giving you bad advice. They wouldn't want to do that to you, but they don't know what you're capable of. They don't know where that flame is or where you're really thinking about where things could go. So avoiding external self-validation and being true to yourself in internal self-validation, being able to look in the mirror and say to myself, am I going at the next goal? Am I looking for the next piece? Or do I really have this sought through? And am I on a true direction, was the best advice that I ever got. And I'm thankful for it. And I've really taken that and adapted it and put it into my own process as I work with students now.
Yeah, exactly. You can't answer the question, how do you follow that?
Yeah.
Or how do you follow that? So one thing I realized, Evan, is that, you know, innovators are very far in between. We're talking less than 5% of the population. True innovators that really go for something that maybe hasn't been done yet, has been created yet. And you said it's really hard to find people that have been to that mountaintop. So my question is this, actually, is for parents out there, because we have a lot, obviously a lot of listeners are parents, right?
Sure.
So when you have a kid that, you know, I guess isn't a three, if you know the Enneagram, right? The innovator, whatever you want to call it, how do you hone that entrepreneurship, or how do you hone that like creativeness where they're not wired that way? I know that's probably a weirdly weird way to ask that. And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, let's reverse engineer it quickly. So you're asking if a student is not an innovator, and that you want to try and find ways to integrate them to become one?
Yeah, or just another way to bring out the best in their creativeness. Because sometimes people go, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. Like, well, okay, you're not
sure.
How do we get there?
Well, I'm biased. So my answer is going to be a little bit, I don't want it to sound salesy, and so I'm going to do my best not to. But I'm a huge believer in cognitive ability. And why that's different from any other profile that most people have taken is it doesn't teach you about who you are or what you are. It teaches you when you are in your element, why things work. And so when I look at students or children who are going through that kind of internal struggle of, well, what am I good at and how do I do it? Giving them the power of cognitive ability will really be that first step, because what it does is it teaches you if you are in a situation that requires you to be more innovative. Well, what is the gauge there? How comfortable am I in those situations? Do I need a support team? Can I do it by myself? Should I persuade the student, if I'm the parent now thinking, right, should I persuade the student to just do it and be the safety net if it does fail? Or do I let them fail and then just let them go through the motions and experience it and then come back and go through it? So there's four different profiles in that. How do we instinctively fact find? What type of information and background do we need in order to become confident and authoritative versions of ourselves? How do we follow through? Do we like to adapt and free fall and, you know, take things as they come? Or do we like to have things with systematic processes? How do I quick start? When I am faced with risk and adversity, how comfortable am I in those situations? And then finally, how do I implement from a creative to a physical perspective? And so a parent knowing that profile on their student, and more importantly, or as importantly, knowing their own profile, will have a much easier time communicating and interacting with their child to be able to know what and how they're going to respond and how they as a parent can respond better to this child's needs.
Yeah. Wow. That was a lot, but I totally grasped all of it. And I'm sure our listeners did too. If not, that's why we have Rewind. Sure. So you can listen to that again. That was awesome. How you did. So for the lamest terms, for people who have never heard this kind of thing before, if you can explain in lame terms, cognitive ability, what do you mean by that? Your intuition or how you're wired?
Dead on. So I'm going 30,000 foot view here.
Yeah.
So if you guys want to follow me up here, if we're looking up, from the airplane down at the ground, I believe that there's three areas of the mind that really need to be understood in order to become one's authentic self or in order to follow one's internal self-validation. So the cognitive ability of the brain is where we find our IQ. It's where we find our smarts. It's where we find the thinking capabilities. And although that's super important, I believe that it's actually the most trainable area of the mind if you look at the two others, which are the affective and the cognitive, which I'll go into now. The affective side of the mind, not effective, but affective, is where we find our emotions. And so emotionally, we want to be emotionally intelligent, right? That's the buzzword around the world right now, EI, emotional intelligence. And we want to know our emotions. But in my world, you know, dealing with 16 to 18-year-olds, think about how many times, and even now at 30, right? Think about how many times from the moment that you wake up to the moment that you go to sleep, your emotions flip, even if it's for 2 seconds. You know, you wake up, there's a text message from somebody who you've been waiting for, so you're excited to get it. You go downstairs, you're out of Cheerios, so you're, you know, whatever. It's putting a damper on the morning. But if you think about how many times your emotions flip throughout the course of a day, it's estimated that it's somewhere between 1,000 and 1,200 times. So yes, we want to be emotionally intelligent, but we don't want to rely on that for big decisions in our lives. So all of that to the drum roll conclusion here, cognitive ability is just like you said, it is intuition. It's when we are faced with situations, whether they are familiar or unfamiliar, how our instincts react to those. And so I believe that when you are cognitively aware of how your instincts are going to react, well, then you can manage the affective, right? You can manage your emotions because you know how your instincts are going to react. And then the cognitive area that I said is very trainable is able to adapt to that. If you know, I'll give you one more example and then I'll stop rambling. If you know that you have a test coming up, right? Put yourself back to high school. If you know you have a test coming up in a week, were you the student, David, that was preparing the night before or on the bus on the way to school? Or were you the one that said, okay, I'm going to go home and start this right now?
Yeah, I was the one that probably didn't study at all, if right. I'm not going to be honest. If I don't have interest in something,
sure.
Like I got 99s in history and math. Everything else was low 70s, late, you know, high 60s. If I have no interest in it, I won't do anything with it.
And it's because your affective at that point is not emotionally connected to the subject material. And your instincts are saying at that point, well, you know what? This is David as a quick start and an entrepreneur. I'm just going to wing it. You know, if it goes well, great. And if it doesn't, that's fine. And then the cognitive debate, it's not that you couldn't do well in those other classes. It's that your affective wasn't into it. Your cognitive said, I'm going to wing it. And your cognitive said, all right, I'm along for the ride.
Yeah, man. So for obviously, this is going to be really hard for you. So I'm sorry if I'm cornering you because I'm not trying to. But I always want our listeners to take like a next step, right?
Sure.
Personally, developmentally, mindfully, or even in our business, how can they relate to this to them? So my question is, what is something that you can maybe have them take away? Like maybe a question that you can ask them and then something they can do with it so they can maybe apply it either personally, mindfully, or again, in their business. Do you have anything like, okay, do you feel this way? You feel that way? If you feel this, do this. If you feel that, do this. If you feel that, do that. Again, in a general sense,
sure.
I know it's probably really tough to do for you.
No,
especially on the
you know
spot,
what?
But
I'm gonna answer you with a scenario that I'd like to put themselves through. So I do this with clients, students, whoever. I call it the 4 M's of success model.
Okay.
So I like to have the people that I work with picture themselves as the most successful version of them, right? So whether that's a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you pick a comfort zone that seems suitable for where you see success in your life. That in and of itself is powerful, right? Because how old are you seeing yourself? How long do you see yourself before you're successful? For me, I always like to see myself 1 year, right? So if I'm thinking of myself 1 year into the future and I'm envisioning this successful version of Evan, and I want everybody to do this, what does that look like? And so what I have found is when you build this vision, and if you want to pause it and come up with your own vision, I think that's a really cool and powerful idea too. But when you have this vision of yourself, it really only boils into 4 categories, all of which start with the letter M. So the first M, and the most obvious, is monetary, right? In this vision of success, how much of an influence is my monetary success on my feeling of my overall success, right? What needs to be in the bank? Where am I living? What am I driving? If those things were in your vision of success, how influential were they? The second M is mating. And that's kind of a funny word that I use, but it's for relationship building, right? If I'm successful, then I have better relationships, whether that's with a spouse, whether that's in dating, whether that's with my family, my coworkers. How important in my vision of success is this element of relationship building? The third M is mastery. And in mastery, what we're looking for here is, if I'm a successful version of myself, how good am I at what I do? How is my success measured by being the best in my area or the best in my ability? And what does that do for my feeling of success? And the fourth M is momentum, which is, if I am successful, the work that I do, the life that I lead is bigger than my own. It impacts more people. So I give people 100 points. And I tell them to allocate as many or as few into those 4 M's as possible or as they see fit. So you could be 100 in monetary, 000. You could be, you know, 30, 70, 00. The only thing that I tell students and people that I work with is you can't put 25 in each because that's just a cop out. But my advice to you is when you think about those 4 areas and you have a clear game plan on, okay, well, I need right now, my success is driven by money. Well, then let's figure out a way to make more money. If it's relationship building, it's that. If it needs more training to become a master, we'll do that. If you need more fulfillment, we'll find that. But it's all about being aware of what defines success and then having a game plan to achieve it.
Yeah, and that was one of our questions, how we define success, and we just talked about that. Now, I think that is so good. So if you're able to, why don't you pause this and talk about, okay, the 4 M's we just talked about, which one out of the 2, the 3, or, you know, again, don't do 25, 25, don't do the cop-out, but which one is there? And then, again, if you had $100, what would you put the most into that you want to achieve? And a lot of people, I notice, is relationships, right? We're relational beings. We get so caught up in success that our family relationships, or whatever you want to call it, suffer because of that.
Sure.
So I would put a lot of coins in that one for sure. Is there any other advice that you have for entrepreneurs that you've learned either the hard way or it just so happened to fall and you're like, oh, this works out great? Anything that you want to say there?
Life changes. You know, life changes quick. And from the beginning of the conception of College Confidence Coach until now, I've seen three major shifts in my business. And I think that the best advice that I can give somebody is when things are happening, when the universe, when God is telling you, hey, it's time to make a shift here, roll with it. Because more often than not, if you're manifesting success into your business, those struggles that you're going to go through are so rewarding at the end of it. And so for me, the biggest thing that I learned right off the bat was when I was scaling my business and then saw an opportunity to change it and make it more boutique. So I don't want to go too long-winded with the story, but when I was second year into College Confidence Coach, I had the opportunity to go and work in Washington, D.C., funded by some really big nonprofits in that area that saw College Confidence Coach as a tool to work with students nationally. And I was really into the idea. Obviously, it was, my big moment. So I moved out there and we were really wildly successful with it right off the bat. But it was taking 12, 13, 14 hours a day of nonstop calls and nonstop, problem solving. And what I realized is that was not just taking an emotional toll on me, it was taking a physical toll on me. And so I had that wake up. I had that moment with God where I was praying. I was like, this is great. We're working. What do we do? And then I had somebody come to me and say, I really wish we had this, but more individualized and more personal. And so I saw it as an opportunity to go more boutique with it again. And anyways, without going too far into the details of the story, I took this emerging and growing firm that was going to be working with hundreds of thousands of students per year and decided that my energies were best focused on working with 20 students a year or 50 students a year or whatever my staff now, as we train them and grow them, are capable of working with. And what I have found is that growing period, that period of transition, was the most influential in my life. So my advice, when you are going through moments where it seems like everything is changing, roll with it because it's probably for the best.
Yeah, and you gotta trust your intuition. So, random question. So when you're looking for coaches to help you, obviously, in your business, what is like the one or two things you really look for in people for that?
Yeah, first and foremost, great instincts. So we will test people's instincts as we're hiring, and it's a fun process. And more often than not, what we're looking for is somebody who just has the ability to just go for it. If I put you in a situation where I say, this is what's going on in my life right now, I want to see how you're going to react to it. Are you going to be overly, over the top? Are you going to be, reading me? So I'm looking for people's ability to interpersonally communicate with me or with somebody on the team. And then second to that is obviously someone who has a great read on people's emotions psychologically as well.
Yeah. So we just talked about a lot, Evan,
sure.
Like a lot.
Sure.
So like a lot. So that being said, what's kind of next for you? What's next?
It's a really, really good question. We are in the process now of scaling in different areas. And so what that looks like for us, we don't want to become a franchise. College Confidence Coach is not a franchise. I see it as a licensing opportunity for people who have the same dream or the same passion for helping students that I do create and farm out and build their own versions of College Confidence Coach under our guidance and supervision. So from CC Coach's end, that's where things are going. From Evan Giokas's end, I see an opportunity to really grow in my consulting business at the moment and take this power of cognitive ability to family-based businesses and helping them kind of merge the gap of, father-son disconnect or mother-daughter or mother-son, father-daughter, whatever it is, right? That power of instinctively being able to communicate with one another, reading people's instincts, I see as a really powerful opportunity for me to pursue.
Yeah. So one of my last questions here is, what do you think the number one, I'm trying to think how I want to phrase this. So let me just say plainly, and I hope it doesn't come across as weird, but what do you think is the number one problem you see in students from high school to college or just in college transitioning into being an adult? What is like the number one or two things you just keep seeing over and over again that you're like, you just want to have a microphone to parents like, stop doing this or start doing this?
I don't know if you've seen my ad. So we have a couple different things that are online, but I have a shock value to it because I tell parents right off the bat, they see me on YouTube, I say, parents, if you're helping your child try and navigate the process right now of high school to college, you need to stop. Because it just goes back to what I was talking about in external self-validation. Maybe you're an accountant, maybe you're a physician, maybe you are a financial planner, whatever you are, right? You're going to want to tell your student, this is how I did it. You got to stop doing it. You have to give them the freedom to explore what it is that they want to do. And if they have an idea, great, roll with it. If they don't have an idea, let's find one. You get out of their way because you being the advice giver and the plan that they're going to pursue is only going to result in them coming back to you and saying, why'd you try to push me to do that? If it doesn't work, it causes for a lot of parent-child strain throughout the process.
So even as a parent, to me, like that would be so hard for me, right?
Sure.
I'm like, let me tell you exactly how to do this and do it right and, you know, learn from my mistakes, right? So that being said, or if you see like, okay, I've tried that, it's not going to work, learn from my mistakes, you're
sure.
saying just still let them go for
yeah,
it.
You have to. You have to let them make their own mistakes. You have to let them carve their own journey. Otherwise, they're always going to wonder what if.
What if? Yeah, I love it. That's smart, right? Just let them go for it. For those that just really connect with you, they're like, hey, I want to learn more about his business, or I want to get entrepreneurial advice from him, or just want to connect with you, maybe have a cup of coffee with you, Evan. What is the best way for someone to contact you or get a hold of you?
Sure. Right to my website, theccoach.com. There's three C's in the middle. It trips everybody up. There's a contact me form. I get all those messages directly. I try and answer anybody from a client to a friend. So if you want to go to that website, click on the get in touch form. I'll get back to you within the day.
Yeah, awesome. Well, if you're listening to this when the day comes out or the day after it comes out, I'm guessing the tickets, in fact, yeah, I'm sure the tickets are already sold because we had four and it's a week from today from the event. So that being said, guys, I hope you have fun at the event that we're having this upcoming Wednesday. And if you didn't grab a ticket because they already sold out, no worries at all. We're planning on having another one. In fact, we have a couple events already lined up, just working out the dates and the details, where I'm even working on the Buffalo Bills ticket office to get a tailgating Bills networking event.
Phenomenal.
Which is going to be awesome. So we like to do things a little different here. And one of the things that inspired me to do that is Evan. So Evan, I just know you're a busy guy. I know you're scaling a business. You're always thinking bigger. I just appreciate your time, man.
Hey, David, thank you so much for having me on. It was fun to talk. And I'm looking forward to networking and being at that Bills event.
Awesome, man. We'll let you know when the tickets go live. And guys, if you haven't yet, make sure that you guys subscribe to our podcast. Over 3,000 local entrepreneurs already have. Make sure you get our email list. Make sure you leave us a rating, whether it's Spotify or on the Apple Store or their iTunes there. And again, we always appreciate you guys listening as always.
If you loved listening to the Western New York Entrepreneurs Podcast and want more, subscribe to it and head on over to WNYEntrepreneur.com for articles, what's coming up next, and to get involved. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.